technology. So this path will be, I don't know if call it holography, but I would say duality, or in the sense of what information can one get when one actually can get the exact information of one side of the theory. And I think we should have some, we can have light. I don't think that, yeah. Okay, so I will start by giving one introduction, the original introduction, and it is somewhat of a Talmudic nature, and then I will also describe other motivations. So one type of idea says, okay, we are doing string theory, but the way we do string theory still nowadays is in a first quantized version. That is, one takes a two-dimensional theory of gravity, one puts it into some cauldron or black box, and one gets, by a set of rules, one gets results for target space scatterings. Now, if we believe that string theory is the way to study gravity, then the question is actually, what about our original input? Because the original input is some two-dimensional theory of gravity. So is it just gravity in 26 dimensions that we should treat in string theory, or just in 10, or just in 4? Or should the rule be that the phenomena of general, the symmetry of general coordinate invariance can be fully understood only if the elementary constituents are strings, or if you use it in the context of string theory? And if that is the case, then you should ask, okay, what about the original world sheet theory you have constructed? Is that a result of some non-perturbative or exact calculation coming out of some string theory? And I think this type of logic led Michael Green, actually, to make quite a few years ago a call for world sheets for world sheets. And, okay, so you make the call, but then you need also to see what are the answers you get for the call. And actually, this can make sense, I think, only if you can really sum one half of that theory you can do exactly. And this is what we are going to do here. We are going to take a very, very primitive theory, but in that theory, one can ask this question and see if indeed one can get a world sheet for a world sheet, and moreover, in the more larger context also of this meeting, is that once you do it, what type of symmetries does it have? Does it have perturbative dualities, non-perturbative dualities? Will there be some surprises once one has the exact result? And these are the things that I'm going to discuss. So in order to start and formulate the question, let's start with 26-dimensional string theory. So in usual string theory, we use, as I said, some first quantized string, and one tells the theory in what target space background the string is moving. Okay? And then, as I said, you put it in the witch's cauldron, you get out answers for S matrix. So now you want to write down, once you do that, some effective target space theory, which is going to encode all the information you have worked so hard to get. So, for example, if your target space is Minkowski 25,1, then your first guess would be that the target space, the effective target space theory, has as its world volume some 26-dimensional world, and then you add up various terms, all finely tuned because they come out of some underlying theory. It's not just everything which the symmetry allows, but it comes in a very finely tuned way. And then you calculate the S matrix elements from that theory, and you compare them with the S matrix elements you have calculated using the first quantized theory. And then you say, okay, this is your effective theory. But This is a very simple way to do it, and we know that this is not, there is more structure involved. For example, we know for many years, imagine that it's not just Minkowski 25,1, but Minkowski 24,1 multiplied by a circle of radius r. Then you know that in that case, even though you have started with a theory, let's say, where the radius of that circle is r, you could equally well have chosen as the world volume of your target space Minkowski 24,1 times a circle of radius 1 over r. So that means that by just giving the original information, you're not really sure what is the effective target space theory you have. At least here, from the point of view of uniqueness, we know it is not unique. Another question you can ask, and this should be again resolved by the non-perturbative question, is it sufficient in the effective target space theory to satisfy ourselves with only one topology? Or are we forced by the theory to have more topologies? For example, we have learned over the years, let's say several years after Green issued this call, that you can have a totally different description of a theory. You can start with ADS5 process 5, as you know, and describe it with a theory with no gravity, explicit gravity at all, just an n equal 4 gate theory, not in 10 dimensions, but in 4 dimensions. So a totally radical different approach, which we are telling ourselves is the correct non-perturbative manifestation of string theory on that. Another question is, does a theory satisfy itself with having just one universe? That is, do you need third quantization or not? And if it suffices to do it, you can manage to do it without third quantization, great. But if you find some difficulties which would be resolved by having more universes, then you got a result. Then you can ask about various symmetries and how the symmetries come out. For example, a symmetry like S-duality or some non-perturbative symmetry, which you may not see genus by genus, so it's not obvious when you do perturbation theory on the world sheet, but becomes manifest perhaps in the effective target space picture you get. So these are the set of questions that one can ask. And here I'm going to base the work that I'm going to describe by some old work done with Elitzur and Forge quite a few years ago, and by recent work we are completing now with Elitzur Oz and Johannes Walcher, which includes both open and closed strings. The former thing includes only closed strings. And the other names I've listed are people who studied the class of models, or initiated and studied the class of models I'm going to discuss. So as you see, this is a very, very ambitious project. So the price of being so ambitious is one can only do it with something which is very, very simple. So I will do it with a very, very, very simple theory, which is a topological theory. I would say en passant that this also asks or begs another question, a question which we now do a lot once we have ADS-EFT, and that is the effective theory of a topological theory also a topological theory? So we have these type of questions now when we have ADS-CFT, because we tell ourselves, look, theories can have various phases in the bulk and various phases on the boundaries. How do they correlate to each other? How does confinement in the boundary manifest itself as some different type of geometry in the bulk? So you can ask a more the primitive question here is, if you start and solve exactly topological theories on the world sheet, is the result, can you describe it by some theory which is also topological? Or do you run into difficulties? So that would be a sub-question of the world sheet for world sheet question. Okay, so I will start by, of course, I will explain what are the topological theories involved. I will, as this is not the audience which I think is very familiar with these, or some of the people are not so familiar, I will explain how this goes, because actually they're very simple. So I will start by looking at a theory which is topological, but the excitations one considers are only closed strings. How does this manifest itself? There will be some Lagrangian. I will describe what it is. And then this Lagrangian will describe maps from Riemann surfaces into some target space. It will be topological. But from that part, it's like our usual sigma model. It describes maps from some worksheet into the target space. Now, when I'm going to sum of the results obtained for all correlation functions over all Riemann surfaces, and then I'm going to ask, what is the target space theory which can reproduce them? Now, in particular, we are going to find in the process, as I said, many types of symmetries, see how they manifest themselves once you do that exactly. And in a more general way, I will anticipate what one gets, one will find that these topological theories have in them also a very, if you wish, a prototype, a very simple moduli space. That is, with a certain set of data, which I will describe, there is a moduli space. The analogous thing would be in, let's say, unitary field theories, where I give you the central charge, and I ask you what are all the theories which have the same central charge, like 1, 2, or 26, or 0, if I dispose of unitarity. So there will be a moduli space for the topological theories. It won't just be one theory. And what we will find is how to map a theory, which would be a point in the moduli space of the initial worksheet theory, how it's described actually by a target space theory, which is a different point in that moduli space. And we will show the exact mapping between the point on the worksheet and the point in target space. So this is going to be one of the main results, is the possibility to do it, and then to check what it actually gives. So now let us start by telling you how you do this very simple meta-topological series. I will start in a more abstract way, that is by sets of very simple axioms, and then I'm going to also give you explicit Lagrangian realizations, so we don't remain just being abstract. So I'm describing now, if you wish, this is analogous, you know the C equal 1, the moduli space of C equal 1 series. There is a circle of radius r, there is an orbifold of radius r, they meet at a certain point, there are then a set of islands which sit there, and that's it. So I'm describing something similar for the topological series. So first data, and I'm going to start by giving you redundant data. That is, I'm going to tell you what is enough data to make all possible calculations in the theory. And later on, we are going to take out the redundancy and see how much is actually needed. But this is, with this, it's sufficient to get to calculate any correlation function. So piece one of data, one has to give a list of BRST invariant operators. So I'm not going to enter into all the details of how one does topological theory. That would be a course on its own. Let's just assume there is a rule which tells you what operators are legal. Let's call that rule BRST invariants. And there is a list of such operators which you have to be able to identify once you're given a Lagrangian. But you can also start abstractly by saying they are given to you. Then you need to know the Zamolodchikov metric on them. That is, you need to know what are their two-point functions. So you calculate the two-point function of any of the two operators, and you get a certain metric, which depends on which of the operators you have put. Now, because the theory is topological, of course, these correlation functions do not depend on the positions you are in. So therefore, it's only the set of numbers. Then another piece of information is the operator product expansion coefficients. The definition, it's enough to know what that two-point function is on a sphere, when you calculate the theory on a sphere. You can calculate it also on a torus or on a genus 2 or genus 3 and any object, but as we will see, it's not necessary. It's enough to know what it is on genus 0. Thank you, I should have said that. Then another piece of information which will help to get the results is the operator product coefficients. That is, if you take two operators and multiply them in topological series, you can express them as a linear combination of linear operators. And therefore, the sum will have some numbers here. Again, in a usual field theory, there are also terms here which tells you about the degree of divergence when you put the two points together. But this is topological, so there is no dependence on the position. So it's just a set of numbers, alpha, beta, gamma, which tells you that if you multiply operator alpha by operator beta, with what power or with what intensity would you get the operator gamma. So if you know the numbers n, the metric n alpha beta, and the operator product coefficient c alpha beta gamma, it's sufficient to know all correlation functions. It depends on your theory, but we like theories when it's positive definite, but it's topological, it doesn't have to be. Okay, it's not a requirement. But then there will be, when we try to invert stuff, for example, you would like it not to be, for example, not to have zero eigenvalues. But if not, you don't invert. But this now, so you can look at different classes. Like what we, those of us who heard the long lecture yesterday, we heard about inverting the metric and when it's possible and when it's not, so on. Yes, please.
Is it enough to know what is the topology of the model expansion? You just give the local.
I give you here the local. I don't think there is any information about the topology of the topology in this case. Now, I want to show to you now how, on the basis of this information, to calculate any correlation function. And then once we know to calculate any correlation function on any genus, we can sum everything together and get the exact results, and then we'll try to express them by some effective theory. So what are the tricks one uses? So there are two types of tricks. Trick number one is, look at any endpoint function correlation on a genus G. It can always be reduced to a calculation of an n minus one point, or a linear combination of n minus one point functions on the same genus. And I will show how, even though it may be apparent already to most of you how. Then the other trick is, any calculation on a genus G can be reduced to a calculation on a genus G minus one. And we will show how this is done. Here we go from n to n minus one on the same genus. Here we will go from an endpoint function on genus G to a superposition of n plus one point functions on genus G minus one. So we have a reductive procedure, which once I convince you how it works, means you can reduce everything to the calculations at G equals zero. And that answers the question you asked me about why did I think it's sufficient for G equals zero. So let's start with the thing which we are all familiar with. How does one remain within the same genus but reduce an endpoint function to a linear combination of n minus one point functions? So here is an endpoint function. Take, for example, the last two and do their operator product expansion. Their operator product expansion means, actually, the definition of the operator product expansion means that you can use, instead of these two, the linear combination of these ones in any correlation function, in particular in this correlation function. So you do it, and then you would get, instead of two, one. So you would get a linear combination of n minus one point functions. And because we said we are giving you the data, what are the operator product expansion coefficients? So you don't need any new information for that. You know how to proceed. So let me give you an example which will eventually turn out useful. Let's say I have a three-point function on genus zero. So I take the operators alpha, beta, and gamma. I do the OPE first of alpha and beta. So I'll get the number C alpha, beta, and I will sum over delta where I'm going over all theta delta operators, and now I have the two-point function here. The two-point function is part of my data. Remember, we said two-point functions are the metric, the homological metric. So we know here the metric eta delta gamma, and now if I contract it, if you wish, I can call these C alpha beta gamma lower indices, but it's apparent that it's enough to know the OPE and the metric. This will give you that information. And from here, you realize that this is true for any endpoint function on any genus. Now one needs to change the genus. So the idea, and we will find here a W operator, and this work was done by, that part was done by Ed Witten. So when you go from, assume that you are sitting on a genus G, and you have some correlation function, which are 4 points. As we said, anyhow, it doesn't matter really where the points are, unless there are topological issues. That is, unless you change the topology. So what it turns out is what you can do, and we'll show in some detail how it really works, but what you can do is, you can universally go somewhere on your manifold, on your genus G object, and if you wish, integrate out one handle of the problem. Just integrate it out. Now, you do it by integrating out a piece where none of your insertions were made, and it turns out that this object you can integrate out and reduce the genus with is universal, namely, it doesn't care on what genus one is sitting, and it's universal in the sense that it doesn't care what are the other insertions you put in. So it's good for any correlation function. You did it for one, you got it for all. So there is some universal operator, which one has to find, and this universal operator, by inserting it, one is able to, if you wish, integrate out a handle in the problem. So if one is, one has the capability to calculate this operator W, and one has to demonstrate this capability, then you can reduce any endpoint function on genus G to a n plus 1 point function on genus G minus 1, where you have in addition the operator W. Now, it turns out, I'll show you how, that the operator W can be expressed as a linear combination of the operators you have in the theory, where the coefficients are calculable. And therefore, if you see how that is done, you can also reduce any G to G minus 1. So in that way, you realize that you can actually solve the whole model. So here, I just write it. Assume that I can show you how to do that. That is, assume I show you the result of integrating out the operators. Then I'm going to have this object. That is, instead of W, I'm going to now know in detail how it's built out of the other operators in the model. And then I want to calculate an endpoint function on genus G. I insert W, I write instead of W these thetas, and now I just have a linear combination of n plus 1 point functions on genus G minus 1. I beg your pardon?
At this stage, we're not
discussing G-string. The weight of the different genera is related to G-string, not W itself. W itself is just a function of the operators in the problem. Let's see, we'll calculate it, so we don't have to speculate on how it's going to look. Okay, and in doing this in a recursive manner, it means that to calculate an endpoint function, which let's call it A on genus G, is you can do that by calculating on genus zero, this is zero, not theta, the correlation function of A times W to the power G. And we know on genus zero how to calculate any endpoint function. So that is, given the data, that is a doable calculation. So I've shown you that all endpoint functions, if you accept that this integrating out works, I've shown you that all endpoint functions for any genus can be calculated exactly. And now all we need to do is to sum them up. Now, to aficionados of this, I should make it clear that in the simple models I'm discussing here, even though there are also some results one has for other models, I've not taken gravity itself to be a dynamical field. Even though in two dimensions it's not dynamical, but I don't integrate over the Teich-Mueller parameters in this case. I have a theory, it is topological, and therefore it has as a subgroup general coordinate invariance. So it is a theory which has a larger symmetry, but includes general coordinate invariance. But I am not integrating here over the moduli space of the Riemann surfaces. Okay, that's the rules of the game when you have metatopological theory. If you want to do that, things become much more complicated and the results are not as strong as they are here. Even though we have some, I will not present them here. So now let me go back and calculate this operator W, show you how it works. So the way to find these coefficients W, which W sigma were the coefficients of each of the operator O sigma in W. So I want to show how to be able to calculate them. So the way, as I told you, they are universal. I calculate them in one place, I've calculated them everywhere. So let me take, for example, a one-point function of the operator theta alpha, whose coefficient omega alpha I want to find, and let me do the calculation of that operator as a one-point function of it in genus one. So I'm by doing, so again, the question is, I want to know what is the coefficient in the operator W of the operator theta alpha. The way I'm going to do it is I'm going to calculate that in two ways. One way is I'm going to calculate the one-point function of theta alpha on a genus one object. So if it's true that W is written in this fashion, then I can replace W by the unknown coefficients, omega, sigma, theta, sigma, and I have now to calculate two-point functions on genus zero. I know the two-point functions, they are eta, alpha, sigma. So what I'm getting here is omega lowercase alpha. So in other words, from one point of view, I find that the operator W alpha is the one-point function theta alpha calculated on genus one. But that's not part of my data. So I need to be able to calculate that in a different fashion as well. So how do I calculate that? I sit on a genus one, I insert one operator, theta alpha, and then I use what we learn in quantum mechanics, the identity, we insert the identity. But here, inserting the identity, you go to a non-contractible thing like the sphere, and you put in it the identity. And the identity is written by taking the operators theta, beta, theta, alpha, and contracting them with the metric eta, beta, alpha. This is the identity in this riff. This tells you, I think, maybe, I don't know how, if you know how to do duality in Veneziano amplitudes, this is the sort of things that you do when you're doing the S-channel, for example, a factorization. You sum over all resonances in the S-channel. So it's the same type of logic. So you find that on the one hand, theta alpha one is what you want to find, omega alpha, and on the other hand, it's now expressed by a three-point function on a genus zero multiplied by the metric. You use the OPE to reduce the three-point function to a two-point function, and the two-point function is a metric. So now you have twice the metric and the three-point function. And by the time you end this, what you find is that omega alpha, which is one side of what the one-point function of theta alpha is on one, is given by the trace of the operator C alpha beta. What is the operator C alpha beta? Oh, sorry, what is the trace of the operator theta alpha, sorry. What is the trace of the operator theta alpha? So what you write in theta alpha is a matrix, and the matrix gives you for each value in the different operator beta, what is the power in which you find beta? And you sum over them, and you call it the trace of that matrix. So that is, if you know the OPE coefficients, which we said we know, then you can calculate the one-point function theta alpha on genus one, and this gives you the coefficients in the W operator, so now you know also the W operator. So now you know that given all the data, you can really calculate any endpoint function on any genes. Yes.
The dimensional space.
For me, n is finite.
It also takes the finite.
Capital N is finite. Okay. The models I'm going to discuss have a finite number of BRST invariant operators. So now, what does that tell you? Let's say you want to calculate any endpoint function exactly. So how do you do it? So A is some endpoint function. You calculate it in genus G by using the trace of A times WG minus 1. Then this is just a definition, what you mean of A of 0. Forget it for the purpose of what we do. Then the exact sum is you need to sum, and here the string coupling comes in. It's with a weight lambda, which is a parameter in the theory, the Dilaton coupling of the model. You sum them all together, and you get a trace of a new matrix, where that matrix has in it A, which you know what it is, it's the endpoint function you want to calculate, and it has the operator W, which you've calculated, it's a function of the, you can calculate it once you know the operator product coefficient and the metric, and the coupling lambda, of course, which is the weight. So this tells you that any endpoint function can be calculated exactly. That's, of course, our dream when we do string theory. You would like to have the power to calculate things exactly by summing over all genera. Okay, here, the model, as I said, is very simple, but on the other end, you can do it. Now, let us go to try and reduce the redundancy and tell you what is actually the amount of information one needs. So I told you that if you know n, and you know the operator product coefficients, and you know the metric, you can calculate everything exactly. But this is too much information. And actually, the amount of information one will need for n operators are just n numbers, generically. And now let me demonstrate that to you. So you will start with the data, which has n, the operator product coefficients, and the metric. And I will convince you now that there are many different set of numbers, C, alpha, beta, gamma, eta, alpha, beta, which describe actually the same theory. And therefore, you have to mode by this redundancy. It's related to it, okay, but it doesn't have a real, such a clear metric in the sense that the metric does not depend on points. So it is some type of symmetry group which acts on that space, and we'll see what that symmetry group is. So there are, first of all, there are constraints on C alpha, beta, gamma. If you remember the old duality where the sum over S channel resonances equals the sum over T channel resonances, you also get it from part of the axioms of topological theory by putting the identity one way or putting it in another way. And this gives you some one property that the operator product coefficients must obey. That actually means that the matrices should commute. And that would be an important thing useful for us. So the different matrices C of the N operators should commute. Then, if you look, I'm not talking here about something supersymmetric from the start. There is some supersymmetry if you want to express this as some twisted n equal 2 supersymmetric model. You get some spin statistics non-respecting theory, but where there are fermions, but they are not here at least from the start. So in series of bosons, you get that the operators theta alpha, theta beta, and theta gamma, when I look at the lowercase OPEs, these have to be symmetric under any permutation of alpha, beta, and gamma. And this will also be important for us. Now, taking this into account, we will need in a moment, consider some non-singular transformation on the set of operators which you have chosen to be your BRST invariant operators. So you are not changing the topological theory, but you are changing the OPEs, and you are changing the metric. So that means that this is, if you wish, Amit, the symmetry you have. You have to take all sets of data which are connected by some non-singular transformation S and mode relative to that. Now, when you do that, the way to do the counting is, as I said, you realize that ST duality requires that the matrices commute. And for a generic case, taking into account the symmetry properties I mentioned, you can actually simultaneously diagonalize all of them, like we do for a set of observables in quantum mechanics. But there we are guaranteed that it's Hermitian. Here's the structs, so we know that we can simultaneously diagonalize them. Here, there are some symmetry properties which allow us generically to simultaneously diagonalize them. And for these cases, they obey what is called the Frobenius algebra, which the mathematicians study in this context. And it tells you that you can go to a basis where everything is very simple. That is, if you take the OPE of two of the operators in that preferred diagonal basis, they contain only themselves. That is, it's a very solipsistic point of view. The only operator with which theta alpha and theta beta gives a non-trivial OPE is itself. And you can normalize so that it's really actually one. So you get operators in a way which are idempotent. That is, theta alpha and theta beta always vanish, while theta alpha are always theta alpha. So with this set of operators, you can reduce everything to one point functions of any of these operators. And therefore, the amount of data you need is just the one point functions of each of these operators in this preferred basis. And this tells you how much data there really is. So for n BRST invariant operators, your moduli space is n dimensional. You don't have to count the dimension, all possible metrics and all possible OPEs. No, just n numbers give you the point in moduli space that you are. So you get an n-dimensional moduli space. Yes?
This was done here. Here the lambdas. There are lambdas here. So theta alpha, theta beta, originally you show it is delta is lambda alpha, which is the lambda you want to rescale later, delta alpha, beta, theta alpha.
And then you can show that you can get the theta alpha, theta beta is delta alpha, beta, theta alpha. No, in the last line you get, you're doing one calculation, and that calculation will give a number. You're finished rescaling. Yeah, no.
You can, but then you will lose that the OPE is one. So there is some real information in this theorem. Here
it's getting smaller and smaller.
It's getting not smaller and smaller, it's n numbers, and that's what it is. And in more sophisticated explicit models, these are related to the intersection of moduli spaces of instantons, which do mappings between the Riemann surface and the target space. You do the various intersections. When the space of intersections of the, you go for homologies to cohomologies to homologies, you get numbers. There are explicit ways to do it. But so there is some information. It's not a content-free thing. But here, when I'm doing it in an abstract sense, I'm just telling you there are a set of n numbers which defines the theory. Once you know that, you also know what is the operator W. So you get the operator which moves you from genus to genus. So now you can calculate all endpoint functions. Now, you would like to be able to write a general Lagrangian which spans to you the n-dimensional moduli space. So think about C equal 1 model. There you write a Lagrangian which can be, for example, dx. The target space can be a circle at the self-dual point. And then you can add to it, changing its radius, by adding coefficients times dx d bar x. And this spans the C equal 1 line of circle. You can do the same for the orbifold. So here, the way you do it is you have one model which you need to start with, which I'll give you an explicit example. Once you start with that particular model, you can, by multiplying any of the operators by some number w, omega or mu alpha, you are spanning the whole space, moduli space of a series which have n observables. And for these, at each point together in one calculation, you can calculate what are all exact correlation functions. Now, I see I was maybe too pedagogical here. So maybe I will say, okay, so you can calculate all endpoint functions. And now after being so abstract, let me describe a particular model. So the particular model is, let the target space look, the sigma model you use for the target space, let it be a sphere, CP1. And do all mappings from Riemann surfaces into a genus zero Riemann surface, which is your target space, which is CP1. That's a particular model where everything can be calculated now in detail. Such models have two operators in them. One of them, if you wish, reflects the fact that I have an identity map, and the other, the volume map. The Lagrangian you start with is, we heard yesterday in the long talk about FF dual, and we heard that we know that in gate theory in four dimensions, you could have F squared plus FF dual, but then you could be courageous and say, I don't want F squared, I just want FF dual. That gives a Lagrangian with a much larger degree of symmetry. The same thing you can have here, there is a theta term which classifies the maps from G equals zero to G equals zero. And this is the theta term of the O3 nonlinear sigma model, and forget the other parts of the nonlinear sigma model. Remain just with the theta term. So this is the explicit Lagrangian which one is now studying. This will be the anchor Lagrangian around which one will expand. So calculating that model, one can calculate, again, if I want to give more information, one can calculate everything exactly in that model. And here, for example, the intellectual arsenal of tools you need is geometric series. So it's not, I'm sorry, it's not some fancy hypergeometric function depending on 17 variables, but it's just a geometric series. And you can calculate here all endpoint functions exactly. What is lambda? Lambda is the Dilaton coupling, which gives you the weighting of each genus. And what is beta? Beta is the winding number. It's like the FF dual, but here it's appropriate thing which maps, counts the winding of the mapping from a sphere to a sphere. So these are the two parameters of the model. And notice that you are beginning to get a feeling that actually the exact results don't depend separately on lambda and beta, but on some combination of them. And this you can do. Beta was like the theta parameter. That is the number with which you weighted the term FF dual. Lambda was a Dilaton coupling. So when you sum over different genera, you have sum over lambda to G minus one. So that's like the Dilaton, that's the Dilaton coupling. That's how you weight each genus. If you wish, it's
combination. Well, you can define the operator, so yes, they will all come in this combination.
And so if you define new operators, O tilde, a little bit like what you wanted to change the definition of operators, you find that everything depends just on lambda b beta to the 1/2. So
do I
know here? No,
that would be great to discuss that model in detail, but the answer is no. And for example, what happens in this model is that it doesn't have antis. The model only allows, it's only consistent when you do the topological theory by having positive windings. You don't have negative windings, so you can't have e to the theta n and e to the minus theta n. So it's different, and you don't get that type for the
topological series. But that's a detail. But, it's a point to say different.
And this become negative.
Okay, so let's geometric series
have a great advantage that they can be summed. But they also tell you that they have a finite radius of convergence. So I wouldn't ask just only what happens when it's negative, or what happens when it's divergent. because that's the first point you have to face, and we will reach there. But the main point I want to say is that, and we will reach that issue, is that by doing this exact answers, one can indeed map, and here I give you the map, forget the details, it just exists, and it's not too difficult. You start with a general point, let's say in the example here, where you have two moduli, because you had two operators. One is identity and one is the volume. So you can sit at any Lagrangian which you expand around it, do it exactly, and then it turns out that you can reproduce the same model by a model sitting in the effective target space theory is topological. It has two moduli, but it sits at a different point in moduli space. So the effective target space theory you can do, I will afterwards show there are symmetries, but the first thing you can do is, you can say, what is my effective theory? My effective theory is a target space theory which has two observables, which start expanded around a genus zero object, which looked like my original target space. So this is answers two things. A, I'm shortening here given the time. A, can can the exact Wolschi topological theory be described by a target space theory which is topological? The answer is yes. Can you tell me exactly which one it is? Yes. It's a theory which is at a different point in the moduli space. How is it different? Well, you solve these equations. These equations relate your parameters on the world sheet with your parameters on the target space. So you found that beta was arranged to be the same, that was the winding number, but you found that the string coupling would be different, and you found that the point where you deformed the theory away from the simple CP1 model, you are led to a different point, deformed point. But you have an exact map between the two. Now, if you go to the preferred basis, things are even simpler, but let me skip that and mention now the following things. Okay, if I go to the preferred basis, it turns out that the parameter, there are two parameters in the target space which change. Let's call them eta. There's some combination of the lambda, which was a string coupling, the beta, which was the winding number, the mu, which was a deformation in the space. And you see that the target space parameters are given in such a manner related to the world sheet parameters. Now, what do you see in here? You see here two type of symmetries, one which we like to call t-duality, which is true genus by genus. If one changes eta plus and eta minus, just switch them, then the results don't change. The theory is already organized itself, that the parameters which appear in the effective target space theory are invariant under t-duality. But you also discover a new symmetry, and that is you can change eta, let's say eta plus, into one minus eta plus. This type of symmetry I'd like to call S-duality. Why? One is the maximum possible coupling you can have there. So if you take original eta very small, you have the same theory with original eta near the radius of divergence. So in that case, you have a system which has a non-perturbative duality. You could have not seen this order by order, but you do see them when they are all together. So here I've made to you the lists of the symmetry in order to make it even easier. Instead of looking at the parameters eta with indices below, I took them with indices above. So therefore, all the symmetries are very, just strike you in your eyes. You see the perturbative symmetry and you see the non-perturbative symmetries. So we found that the theory, the effective theory can be topological, and we found that it has two type of symmetries, let's call them t-duality, which are true genus by genus. I will motivate the name in a moment more. And you can also take S-duality, which is only true for the whole sum. Now, how to try and motivate the names and address the question Neil asked about the point of divergence. So the point of divergence, let's define eta plus minus to be one half is irrelevant, one minus p plus minus. Then in that case, you see the t-duality is taking p plus into p plus and p minus into minus p minus, which is what you know t-duality does to left and right. Now, it is very tantalizing that there is a certain value of p plus and p minus where the thing diverges. I don't know if it has any meaning. Remember that usually when we do field theory, we are cursed by having a zero radius of convergence. And we need to do Borel summability, and we need all kinds of tricks, which we hope also nature studied the same books that we do when we do these type of tricks. Here, the radius of convergence is finite, but you see it has an edge where this would break down. And what would be the correct language, if there is one, after it breaks down, that's open for speculation, but you see it here explicitly in the calculations. Now, let me tell you two more things which I like from here. One is, it's true, I didn't cheat you, when I told you that I can reproduce all correlation functions by doing a model where the target space was a sphere deformed a little. But I could have also done it by taking the target space with a different topology. So I could have done the same calculation, not with what you would guess is the world volume of target space immediately, CP1, because the model is organized around CP1, but I could have taken an object which has a different topology, and I would have gotten the same correlation functions after readjusting the couplings. So we see in this simple model the strong ambiguity which we believe string theory produces us, because as you know by now, there is no mathematical concept in classical mathematics which is not ambiguous in string theory. You think that the geometry is always well defined, that is a radius r and 1 over r are different? No. You can have ambiguities or symmetries between r and 1 over r. You think the dimension is holy? No. You can have dimension 4 in describing dimension 10. You think commutativity of the world sheet is holy? No. You can have a theory which is commutative in this description and a theory which is not commutative. You think that singularity structure is holy? No. You know that some orbifolds, some time-like singularities can also be described as objects with no time-like singularity. And now you see here that also in these examples, topology is not holy. I could have taken the theory with the natural topology, but it's ambiguous. I could have also chosen other topologies and reproduced the same functions. Now again, you can always try to attribute this because this model is so simple. But many of the features which we discussed here, like S-duality and T-duality, we know survive complexities. So I think we should keep in mind that also this may survive. Another thing is I mentioned third quantization. And I didn't tell you here the whole truth on that, on the topology. Because when we do, if we use the S-matrix rules, and now you should be a specialist now in S-matrix on it, you know that we usually sum over, there are connected and disconnected diagrams we should sum over. But disconnected diagrams don't vanish in Feynman only for very exceptional momenta. So usually we don't think about this. Now I'm doing first quantized string theory. In first quantized string theory, in principle, I should take connected and disconnected Riemann surfaces. If I would insist that I only, as we always do, only take connected Riemann surfaces, then everything I told you is true. If, on the other hand, I allow to take also disconnected Riemann surfaces, and here disconnected correlation functions on disconnected Riemann surfaces don't vanish generically. It's not exceptional momentum that we have here. So in that case, you would only get the topological theory if you third quantized it. That is, if you would have insisted that your effective target space theory is not one sphere, but is a coherent superposition of spheres. If you allow it to be a coherent superposition of spheres, then you reproduce connected and disconnected diagrams. So connected diagrams, no problem. You get the first one, the second quantized or whatever effective theory. But if you insist to have everything, which is connected and disconnected, then you would need to do cert quantization. Now, I beg your pardon? Yes, you get,
in that case, you get. Now, unfortunately, the rules of the game here are up to us,
because it's up to us if we want, there's no unitarity check or something which tells us I need both. So in this primitive model, I can just note that if I have connected and disconnected, and I want to reproduce an effective topological target space theory, I need to allow to have many Riemann, many spheres. If, on the other hand, I just stay connected, no problem. I stay in the realm of the usual game. Okay, so now I have 5 minutes to describe what happens in the case of closed and open. Okay, so I will just briefly outline, I won't show you then the results, I'll just briefly outline how this is done. So if we allow to have also brains in the theory, and as you know, how were brains first described? The students know when it was first found? They were found that because when you do simple topological models, you actually have that higher genus contributions are not bored, have G factorials in them, and therefore you can't sum them. Now, but that is true when you have gravity. That comes from the Teichmuller moduli space. Now, we ignored it here. So we don't have to put in brains. That's another decision of ours. We can either have brains or not. Once gravity is in, there is no choice. We have to put in the brains. Here, we can live with them or without them. If you live with them, then the task you have to do is to calculate an endpoint correlation function on an object which has a certain genus and a certain number of boundaries. Now, how is that done? Can you do it exactly? The answer is yes. The only thing you need is to find the new operator, let's call it V and not W, which reduces the number of boundaries. So if there is an operator V, which is universal, and reduces the number of boundaries, you can do everything exactly. We did that. We found it's not totally universal, because it does depend which operators sit on the boundary. The boundary has on it operators, always. So if there are no operators on it, it vanishes, doesn't give any contribution. So we do get Vs, they're not universal, they depend on the operators which sit on the boundary. There are two operators which can sit on the boundary. You may think that because it's a sphere, the explicit example we discussed, you can put brains everywhere, but no, it turns out you can only put them on the equator if you want to be a topological theory. And the only thing which distinguish, you have two which are distinguished by, if you wish, the orientation of the Wilson line on the equator. So you calculate, you find the operator V, and with it you can calculate things exactly. What are the two main results you find? One is that S duality and T duality remain. That's one, maybe three main results. The second result is when you calculate a general endpoint function, which has N operators, which are bulk operators, and M operators, which are boundary operators, unlike some speculations, it doesn't factorize. You can't calculate them separately. The exact result is not the result of calculating separately the bulk and the boundary. And the third thing, you can ask about open closed string dualities by summing over all possible boundaries, for example, healing the theory from boundaries and just leaving what happens after the boundaries are removed. And you find, which is not surprising, that there is a one-to-many correspondence. That is, many closed string series can describe, sorry, one closed string theory can describe many open string series when you sum over, you have just the inclusive information and you summed over all the boundaries. But, as I said, the perturbative and non-perturbative symmetries remain the same. So to conclude, we have here it's very, very simple. But on the other hand, it sharpens the type of questions you can ask. It points out to non-perturbative possibility and proof here of non-perturbative symmetries. And I think it also touches you to think again about the issue of the topology, how is it fixed when you give the data, and about cert quantization. That's it. Just on time.
A few responses ago, you had a map of eta plus minus goes to eta plus minus times 1 minus eta plus minus. Is
it one case? No, that was it's actually true for an n case as well.
And
do you want me to show the transparency?
No, it doesn't matter. Just, the map reminds me of a logistic map. Do you get chaotic motion moduli space by iterating a map?
You say what happened to an iterator?
Yeah.
Thanks for the question. So the question is, okay, if we are in the Talmud, let's go all the way. So let's try and iterate again and again and again and again. And unfortunately, there's only one fixed point, which is eta equals zero. That's the only fixed point. You would have hoped maybe there is a more interesting, like a self-duality point, a more interesting fixed point, but it's not. And 1 over eta is always smaller. There's a monotonicity that you get.
But is it chaotic?
It's just this.
And it looks like logistic map, so there is a range of eta for which it would be chaotic.
Between 0 and 1? Maybe? You're sure?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Don't remember enough.
Let's look.
It is Feigenbaum.
Yes.
Is it?
It's a Feigenbaum map. Yes.
Yeah.
But
it is Feigenbaum.
But here I think between 0 and 1, I just see it's monotonic, so I doubt it's a. Maybe, but if I'm curious, if yes, it would be nice. I'm glad that you joined the
committee. More questions? So if you have less than a 10-minute break and meet back here at 11:15 for 5:30, right?